Represent, giving young people a voice in politics.
Kids should go to school. That's what we're committed to.
What do we want? What do we want? When do we want it now?
I haven't flip-flopped. I said no originally, then I said yes, then I have said no, and I've stuck to it.
I didn't need to do this. I've already done a lot of wall for the election.
The English fought a civil war over this matter.
Don't deal with the nuance of the Canberra bubble.
I don't know what to do with it. We have so much money.
What we want is more learning in schools and less activism in schools.
Issues that perhaps may be controversial today, but 30 years from now, your children, your grandchildren are going to be thankful that you stood up for what it was right.
Represent.
Represent.
Represent. You're listening to Represent.
Sin acknowledges and pays respect to the owners of the land on which the House of Sin and Studios stand, the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations. Sin also acknowledges and pays respect to the elders and traditional owners of the lands our content reaches, as well as the radio stations we broadcast from across the country.
Hello, Lloyd Connolly with you this afternoon for Sin Media's political discussion program, Represent. We explore politics and current affairs across the country to find out what matters to young people. I'm joined with Johnny, Viet, and welcome to the studio, back again, Oscar. Today, Australia pays tribute to Tim Fischer, former Deputy Prime Minister, who passed away yesterday. A leader of the National Party, he advocated for the interests of the country, that is, country Australia, though he was also a faithful coalitionist who was prepared to champion the national interest. This was exemplified by his instrumental role in the passages of Australia's gun control laws. Tim served as Australia's first resident ambassador to the Holy See and was also known as an enthusiast for rail transport. He was recognised as the special envoy for the Adelaide to Darwin Railway. But I think most Australians will be remembering Tim Fischer the man. Despite the coarse nature of politics, Tim Fischer always seemed to come out as a man who was quite gentlemanlike, a man who was genuine, would keep his promises, and remember people's names and faces, and kind of genuinely care about his constituency. Steph Ryan, the member for Euroa in the Victorian Parliament, put out something I thought was quite touching today on Twitter. She had a letter from Tim when she was elected those 5 years ago about how to survive in politics and parliament. It included things like write down a list of friends when you start, and down the track, those friends you might lose through politics. But make sure you keep up to date. Every Melbourne Cup day, send them a message, keep in touch. Don't get caught up in the Canberra bubble. Become a subject matter expert and look to countries outside of Australia as well. So Sin pays our respect to Tim Fischer. Coming up today on our program, the Australian energy market operator warns that electricity blackouts will be in season this summer. Australia commits defence personnel to the Strait of Hormuz, and protesters assemble outside Ararat to protect sacred trees from an expanding highway. That's coming up on today's program. Until then, we've got Second Dinner by Donny Barret from Swin's Sweet 16. That was Second Dinner by Donny Barret. You're listening to Represent on Sin on 90.7 FM, digital and broadcasting across the country online. Now, there are protesters right now. The call's gone out for protesters to drive up to Ararat and assemble because the bulldozers are coming. They're is an eviction notice for the a camp that's been set up just off the Western Freeway. The camp set up to protest and protect sacred trees in the area. So it's the Djapawurrung tree, Embassy. Now these trees are sacred to the local indigenous people. But you could say that they're sacred to all of us, right? They form part of the cultural and, I guess, environmental history of our nation. So specifically, these trees were places where Indigenous mothers would give birth to their children. And the trees located around were where they would bury the child's placenta. So you can see that there is a very kind of rich connection, a very strong connection between Indigenous people and this area. But those trees, at least a significant amount of those trees, are set to be demolished, bulldozed, to expand the Western Highway. What are your thoughts about this? Now, Vic Rhodes have said that the highway needs to be expanded. This has been on the table for many years because it's simply unsafe. It's a very narrow stretch of road for what is one of Victoria's main trade routes.
I think it's a problem in this sense that they've essentially manufactured consent. I mean, I don't think anybody really consented to this. Definitely not the Aboriginal community. And definitely just anybody who appreciates any kind of Australian culture. The people from the tent embassy have actually speculated that it was a manufactured consent issue, saying that that they did put this on the table a long time ago and they did consult people who registered Aboriginal organisations. That's very vague, isn't it? So my issue is, where is the transparency in this issue? It seems like they've gone over the heads of all the cultural checks and balances they should have gone through. It seems like they didn't go through the correct processes of even getting this verified or anything.
Yeah, and I guess part of that, those kind of recognised Indigenous agencies and consultation forms part of the ongoing treaty debate or process here in Victoria. So if you're unaware, Victoria is about to elect an assembly of Indigenous people to continue that treaty process, that process of kind of making links, formal legal links between the Indigenous First Peoples and the state government.
Protecting Indigenous voice in Parliament.
But the question is, what's the point of the treaty? If we can't do something as simple as protecting sacred sites right now, what does that mean for treaty?
I mean, I think the treaty is a bit tokenistic if you don't really acknowledge the perspectives of the indigenous people on the lands on which this is happening. And I find it interesting in another piece of news this week that the state government decided to seek heritage protection for one of the freeways down in Melbourne here, called the Eastern Freeway, to be given heritage status on that. Do you have an opinion on that, Lloyd?
Yeah, well, quite a few. I think we'll get to that in a moment. Talking about treaty, let's go to a song. It's Treaty by Yofu Yindi. You're listening to Sin. You're back with Represent on Sin. Now, that was Treaty by Yofu Yindi. We're talking about Indigenous affairs here on Represent. There is a freeway being expanded in Western Victoria, which is going to lead to the felling of sacred trees. Now, you brought up something just before Viet, that the state government at the same time, or there's a suggestion from within the government, that we should heritage list the Eastern Freeway.
Yeah, that is an interesting proposal, to say the least, from the government. But according to their justification, experts have found that it could be justified because of its aesthetic and historical values. And that poses a question in these two stories, you know, whose aesthetic and historical values are being valued through this process? What if we can heritage list a freeway, you know, what about these trees that are being felled on the western side of Melbourne, or potentially failed through this new freeway plan, you know. And so it raises questions about back to the treaty. Okay, if we're going to have a treaty and respect our First Nations peoples, does that, shouldn't we respect their aesthetic and historical values as well? You know, so it's interesting, but what do you think about this, Lloyd?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like something out of Utopia.
I know.
At this same moment, a suggestion to heritage list a freeway. Mm. Now, that might sound a bit extreme. I think I would generally support that. It just means that the government would have to apply for a permit through Heritage Victoria to alter the freeway. I mean, one question is, if we ever build Doncaster Rail or the busway, how will that heritage process work there? But back to these really important trees, you know, it's unfathomably kind of more significant rather than the architectural merits of a freeway from the 60s, but trees that have this deep connection to our First Peoples and to the Australian story more generally. Oscar, what do you think this means for the politics of the situation?
So I think Labor, if we look at also Labor's kind of policy, much more coal-friendly policy in Queensland as well, I think this will mean a general kind of decrease to Labor, which has been adopting, you know, increasingly progressive values. And I think this may mean that other minor parties, like the Greens, may get more votes in a future election. This is also kind of more generally.
Yeah, where we're seeing actually Lydia Thorpe, who was the member for Northcote. Now, she's at the embassy right now, I believe, part of the protest. She's also a candidate for the treaty process. So there is an interesting intersection between Greens politics, usually the politics of the inner city, reaching out into Ararat, right? These are blue ribbon and national seats. People who use the roads, road users, truck drivers, businesses.
It's interesting that you raise that, because when I spoke to David Ristrom for Represent, I did ask him about the Greens' moves coming up in the inner city, and he speculated. He said that from the election, they are just exhausted. So it'll be interesting to see if that actually does affect their voter turnout in coming elections in the future?
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, it will compound the wider discussion happening, particularly within green circles, about deforestation in Victoria, the felling of native forests for pulp and paper, which has significant effects for our climate and our water. And even these trees on the side of the Western Highway, they form part of that. These are very old trees. Some of them are 800 years old. And trees that old hold significantly more carbon than new trees. So they'll have a cost-benefit analysis. They're going to look at different routes. They've chosen this one. There's a suggestion that they should have chosen another one, which will mean less trees will cut down. They're going to plant new trees, but of course those new trees can't make up for the carbon that's lost, but also they can't make up for that deep cultural significance. I guess my question right now would be, how do you think this is going to play out? It's been a long time in the planning, this highway widening project. The Vic roads are ready to go.
Well, I think the government is focused on that cost-benefit analysis, and I don't have my figures here at least, but, you know, depending on what that longer route might take, you know, to avoid the felling of trees, if it comes at the cost of having that cost-benefit analysis, that cost-benefit ratio down, then I don't think the government will change their plans in the immediate instance. So, because governments right now, especially in terms of infrastructure, they're very hyper-focused on this cost-benefit analysis, making sure that at least their returns are higher than $1. And so they don't want to sacrifice that in the name of environmental or, you know, aesthetic protection.
It's amazing to see how many young people are getting involved who are driving up to Ararat to join the protest. So I feel for the Indigenous peoples, and I really hope that everyone is safe in this. And I encourage people to kind of get involved in this issue, do some research, and you might find yourself driving up there yourselves. Because this is going to happen maybe today, maybe Monday. It's going to happen sooner than we think. You've been listening to Represent on Sin. A lot more coming up on today's program. But we're going to a song. It's called Sanctuary by Joji from our Sweet 16. You're with Lloyd, Oscar, Danny, and Viet.
That was Sanctuary by Joji. Absolute banger of a song. Now, you're listening to Represent on Sin with Lloyd, Johnny, Viet, and Oscar. And we're going to be talking now about the Australian Energy Market Operator's new report on the forecasted power outages. That's going to be a big problem for Victorians and people from New South Wales because of a massive lack of energy supply and transmission capacity because of aging coal fleets and lacking energy infrastructure. Now, more than 1 million Victorian households are likely to go dark during the peak of summer for up to 4 hours, roughly, and 770,000 in New South Wales. That means that in the peak of summer, when everybody's running their air conditioning, they'll do something called load shedding, where they essentially cut people's power off for X amount of time to meet the demand because they don't have the supply. Now, the report by the AEMO says that reliability in household power supply will continue to decrease in the next 10 years, calling for more investment in dispatchable power, being coal, gas, battery, and pumped hydro. Now, this is in response to a lot of coal plants going dark recently because, well, they're just obsolete, they're old. They're referring to it as an aging coal fleet, and they're not able to keep up with the demand that's been put on them, so they're all falling apart.
I don't know if anyone here remembers, but during the when there was the last when they did the rolling power outages earlier this year, there was a lot of discussion about the Hazelwood coal mine or the Hazelwood generator, which is of course a brown coal electricity generator that, you know, the company running it shut it down, and there was a lot of calls for the Liberal Party blamed it on the government, the state government, which I found a bit strange because, you know, it was a private decision. But
yeah, I think that's interesting because right now it seems that the government's federal and state are playing a bit of a hot potato game with who's to blame. They're throwing accountability around like crazy because right now it's quite up in the air who is going to be responsible for the very much needed investment in energy infrastructure. And it's mostly going to be renewable.
But and it's interesting because the federal government, at least Angus Taylor, the federal energy minister, has said that it's the renewable power and the renewable energy infrastructure that is letting the power grid down. But in fact, the Australian Energy Market Operator has said if it wasn't for those renewable energy power grid, energy power feeding power into the grid, then Victoria would be in a much worse situation at the moment, and it's mainly due to the unreliability of the coal-fired power stations, which is leading to this instability in the power grid at the moment. And so there's this issue about just making sure that the remaining coal power we have is reliable enough through refurbishment and, you know, keeping it well maintained.
All right, that's what's happening with the coal right now. But stay tuned, and we'll discuss what's happening with renewables. What song have we got coming up now, Lloyd?
We've got Mountains by Ainsley Willis. That was Mountains by Ainsley Wills. Now, of course, Mount Ainslie, famous mountain in Canberra, Australia's political capital. You're listening to Represent, Australia's the capital of radio programs about politics, here on Sin. Now, we've just been talking about the heat waves that are coming for Melbourne, which are going to knock out our power system. Now, that sounds quite dramatic, but renewables are going to play a part in this, and I think, hopefully, they're going to defend us from some of this energy failure. How's that going to work?
Well, that's right. We just discussed the heat wave this summer that's probably going to cause a lot of power outages, and now we're going to figure out what's going on with renewables. So the Victoria Labor government has proposed a bill that will sign into law a minimum of 50% renewable energy by 2030. This is going to mean a lot of energy infrastructure spending and renewables, which is what we want to see. And that seems to be the Victorian government's response to the energy shortages that were forecasted for the summer. Now, this is going to speed up the phase-out of fossil fuels in Victoria, most likely. But as we talked about earlier, the coal fleet is ageing and many plants are falling out of operation. And as we saw, Lily D'Ambrosio,
D'Ambrosio.
Thank you, Lloyd. She's blamed the failure on the shortages on old coal power plants. So, definitely, I think the response by the state government is going to be more investment in renewables, which is probably a very positive direction for Victoria to take. What do you guys think? Do you think Victoria will reach the goal by 2030 of 50%?
I mean, I don't think it's a question of if we get there, but when. We should be moving towards renewable energy given our climate change situation at the moment. But I think the Victorian state government is probably best placed out of all the state governments to be able to shift the infrastructure towards 100% renewable energy the quickest out of all the state governments at this point. South Australia is definitely giving the Victorian government a run for their money, though.
Yeah, and, it is, isn't it?
And especially since the Tesla power battery was installed in as part of the South Australian power grid. And it is notable that despite what Resources Minister Matt Canavan has said about the big battery being the Kim Kardashian of the energy world, the Australian energy market operator disagrees with this analysis and says that since the building of this Tesla battery, it has been far quicker than to intervene in the market when it's unstable compared to the actual AEMO, the Australian Energy Market Operator, intervening, because those rolling blackouts that we mentioned earlier in the segment, that is the intervention by the AEMO to stabilise the power grid, but they have stated that this battery is far quicker at adjusting the power grid to make sure that it's stable. So I think renewable energy is the way to go. It's just how well it's implemented. And given the battery pack in South Australia, you know, that's an example of an effective way of stabilizing the grid, so it seems.
Yeah, definitely. It's been when they have been discussing renewables just across the board, the issue definitely is storage and transmission. So when we talk about renewable investment, that money is going to be going to battery storage, not just generation. I think people don't realise the problem that is faced with not just renewables but all power generation. There's the issue of storage and transmission. So I think when we do see a lot of investment in renewables, it's going to be also that money is going to be going to the power transmission between states and power grids.
I love the battery. It's amazing what you're saying, Viet, how it just maps on to power demands perfectly. The big hefty coal plants take a long time for the generators to switch on and map with demand. And these coal plants, they're already on their last legs. So we're going to maintain our baseload power. We're transitioning to renewables. It seems like at that same time, renewables should be the source of that baseload power. Of course, there are other options, but can we deploy them as quickly? No, we can't. And if we don't, we're going to have blackouts. You're listening to Represent on Sin. We discuss politics, if you haven't worked that out yet. But we also play music. So we've got a song for you. It's on our Sweet 16. It's our young and up-and-coming Australian artists. It's She by Jamila.
That was She by Jamila. You're listening to Represent here on Sin. And now we're with Lloyd, Gianni, Viet and Oscar. And now we're going to be talking about the recent decision by the Australian government to commit some defence personnel to protecting the oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz in the Middle East. Now, just to give you a bit of context, the Strait of Hormuz is a critical shipping lane, especially for oil, given that it is in the Middle East. About 20% of the world's oil goes through the Strait of Hormuz, and so it's a critically important shipping lane to protect. And so initially, US defense personnel committed their Navy ships to do patrols and protect the oil tankers, but now Britain and Australia have joined their ally, the US, in protecting those ships. Now, Scott Morrison has said that it is a time-limited, modest and meaningful involvement, and so he's trying to suggest that this won't be a large-scale military involvement. But Oscar, what do you think about this recent development in Iran and Australia going to the US's aid?
I think it's like Australia's, you know, kind of entangling itself more in the Middle East. And I mean, this is quite like, compared to, you know, Australia's current involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, this is kind of rather modest, I would say, in comparison.
Yeah, because the stated aim of this, by the government at least, is just to protect those oil tankers, those critical oil tankers, transporting their oil through that strait to the world. And so right now it seems to be a limited involvement, but, you know, with the instability of the Middle East, you know, it's hard to go from there. But it is interesting to note that Scott Morrison has said that it will only be a six-month time period that they'll be involved in, but it is open to revision. So Australia's involvement could be extended. But what do you think about that, Oscar?
So I think it's interesting because this is also, you know, this all the current seizure controversy all stems from Trump's decision to leave the arrangement because this was happening, you know, before the comprehensive agreement, the Iran nuclear agreement was made, and now it's beginning to happen again after it. And I don't think this is surprising.
For sure. And to give you a bit of context behind what led to this stage, initially Gibraltar, a territory of the UK, decided to seize an Iranian oil tanker because they were suspecting that they were shipping oil to Syria in spite of European sanctions against Syria. And then in retaliation of that, Iran and their Iranian Revolutionary Guards, their defence personnel, decided to seize a British oil tanker in the Strait of Hormuz as well. So it's a bit of a tit-for-tat for the moment, but we will go to the interesting dynamics in the Middle East in a moment. But right now, we're going to go to a song of Louis Capaldi called Tough. You're listening to Represent on Sin with Lloyd, Gianni, Oscar and Viet. Was Tough by Louis Capaldi. You're listening to Represent here on Sin with Lloyd, Gianni, Oscar and Viet, and it's definitely a tough situation in the Middle East at the moment because given everything that's happening with defense personnel being committed to the Strait of Hormuz, there is some broader geopolitical implications of this. So it really is playing out as Iran versus the US at the moment. And
the instigator of this timeline of tension, to be honest, was the tearing up by Donald Trump and his administration of the nuclear agreement that was signed by Barack Obama in 2015 through what they claim to be a violation of the conditions of the agreement. And also because they believe that Iran is sowing is making the region unstable at the moment. Now, it is interesting to note that the UN inspectors, through this nuclear agreement, have said that Iran was following the conditions of the agreement, and also Europe, China and Russia also wanted to stay in the agreement as well. And to be honest, the Iran issue has been the only issue that's unified those three actors in this case. And so I want to pass it to you guys. And what do you think is the end goal of Iran here? And what is the end goal of the US? Are they angling for war? Is it a bit of posturing? Or what do you think it is?
Well, the US is already actively at war with, I think, at least 8 countries. And I think there are some in Congress and in the government that would love to see war with Iran. I mean, it's a juicy steak for the military-industrial complex. But I don't think anybody wants war. Iran is a big, big country. They've got a pretty big military. And they're also aligned with other bigger countries. They're a big enough country to have allies that could cause... War would be very devastating to economies across the globe. So I don't think anybody except specific interest groups want war.
I think even those specific interest groups don't want war, but of course there is the chance here for misunderstanding, which will lead to conflict.
I think they want activity. They want to, you know, be able to get, you know, their ships, their planes out on, you know, out on the Strait of Hormuz. So, you know, they make more of them and they can show more need for them, but I don't think they want, you know, action.
And given the amount of military hardware in this area, it is interesting to note, and also, you know, it gives a higher likelihood of a mishap going on, especially since not that long ago, the US was about 10 minutes from striking Iran before Donald Trump called it off. So it is an interesting situation for us to keep on monitoring at the moment. But as a final subject, and a much lighter subject on the subject of Donald Trump, Donald Trump's thought bubble, let's say, of buying Greenland. What do you guys think about that?
Oh, it's bizarre.
It's kind of a new level of crazy. Like, you know, Trump's done some, you know, quite strange things, but, like, cancelling a state visit because Denmark said you couldn't have that thing.
It's like something a petulant child would do. Now, Donald Trump this week has declared himself the king of Israel. He wants to buy Greenland, and we might be heading towards, possibly, war with Iran. We're in a really weird time here.
What a time to
represent, giving you a voice.
Thanks for tuning in. We've been your hosts, Lloyd, Danny, Gianni, and Viet with Represent on Sin. You can keep up to date and let us know what you thought of our show on our socials. Find us at Sin Represent on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you want to hear this episode again or catch up on any of our episodes, you can find our podcast on Omni at Represent. And remember
to stay political.